Oh, here we go. 450 episodes, 9 years of Punk News podcast, 11 physical music releases, 13 live shows thrown, 16,500 record reviews, 70,000 news articles, and 20 years of Punk News in 2019. Do you think we're stopping? Do you think we're slowing down?
No.
We're back. We're harder. We're faster. We're crazier than ever. So you must say, you at Punk News, you must have a great plan. You must have a great set of rules and a great set of regulations.
No.
We do not have a plan, so don't push us. We're crazy. We don't have any rules. If we want to write a review about a major release, we'll do it. If we want to talk about Star Trek The Next Generation for 15 minutes, we'll do it. Is there a plan here at Punk News?
No.
You get it? Rules, we're laughing at you. We don't take money from readers, and we don't take money from record labels or bands. We don't even ask to get the shows for free. We're truly, 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 truly independent, and we have no compass. We don't make money on this. We make negative money on this. I see you out there burning a flag, trying to act uber punk, trying to thumb your nose at the system. Baby, we set Washington, Lincoln, Hamilton, and Jackson on fire every day. You can't compete with this. 20 years of the site, 9 years of the podcast, no rules in sight, Captain. We embrace the chaos. You know our style. We'll walk up to the great snake and snatch his tail and squirt seltzer water in his face. We'll throw rotten eggs at Typhon, and then we'll hop in our 83 Camaro and speed away. We'll shake Loki's hand and then kick him in the nuts. We'll jump on a pet's back and smack his behind. We'll see Sutek walking down the street. We'll ask his girl to the ice cream social right in front of him. We're not scared, baby. We're crazy. You know our style. Tom, 6 years here at Punk News Podcast. You know our style. I'm John G, 16 years here at Punk News. You know our style. Adam White, 20 years here at Punk News Podcast. You know our style. So you must be saying, oh, you guys are special. You guys got the gift. You guys are the chosen few that can run a Punk News website for 20 years. You are the chosen few that can run a podcast for 9 years. Adam, Tom and Adam, are we special?
No.
That's what I'm saying. They're up to date. They're right on the buzzer. Anyone can do it. Just grind away. Punk is mine and punk is yours. But whatever it is, it's moving quicker and quicker. So here at Punk News, here at the Punk News Podcast, 9 years, 450 episodes. Are we stopping? Are we slowing down? Are we becoming more planned? Are we becoming more civilized?
No.
That's right. Hey ho, Punk News Podcast 450. Let's go. Editor John Gentile. Here we are, boys. Adam, Tom, and Adam.
Another classic John Gentile freestyle.
Tom and Adam. Listen, it's not beat poetry, it's beat down poetry. That's what I'm saying. Here we are, boys. 450 episodes, 9 years. How crazy is that? 9 years of Punk News Podcast.
I've never thought about
it. How come it took 11 years of Punk News before you fools thought of a podcast? That's what I want to know. Huh, Adam?
I don't think I thought of the podcast, but there were not podcasts. We were pre pod. Was there even pods at the start of the?
I have no idea. News?
When did an iPod show up? Let alone one that you could put a podcast onto.
I started listening to the podcast like 6, 7, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, maybe. And a couple years later, I'm on it. Talk about the American dream.
Yeah. It's just.
I mean, I went from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. Am I stopping anytime soon? No.
We should give credit where credit's due. I believe it was either Brian Yancey or Rich Verducci who had the idea to start a podcast. I remember the conversation specifically. It was like, oh, there's this new thing called a podcast. We should try to do one for Punk News. And well, here we are 9 years later.
Yeah. So
after Adam, I took control.
Yeah, Rich had one.
I'm stuck on the no thing.
Yeah, you should drop that now.
No.
Rich, I believe it was Rich, had a show, had a podcast before he was involved with Punk News, where him and Narriman, who was our first show editor, they kind of like went around and recorded interviews with bands at shows and things like that. And they put out, I don't know how long they went with it. It was 20 episodes or 50 episodes or something like that. But they did their own little thing. And that was like, there was no one in the that I was aware of, at least, that was in the punk sphere that was doing any of that at the time. So, you know, kudos to them. They were right on top of it. Our major accomplishment, John, really, is that we occupy a sweet spot between unable to quit out of foolish pride and unable to take it to a level where it's actually going to make us money and therefore probably be ruined out of laziness. So like that's great. That's where you want to be.
I don't think we have to worry about it being ruined.
Well, okay. I want to qualify ruined. I mean, whoever's listening to this is listening to it for some reason. I mean, I don't, so I don't know what they're listening to it for.
I assume that they're in some kind of a detention center and they're trying to get information out of them or something.
Tom and Adam are doing that thing where they insult the podcast, which I have no idea what they do. And listen, I've listened to the other punk rock podcasts out there. Some of them are just music programs, and that's cool, just music. But I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but other podcasts where there's commentary about punk rock, the people are so uninformed and it's just so insufferable. I really do think that the Punk News Podcast is the best punk conversation podcast there is. I really do feel as though we address relevant issues at a higher intellectual level than most other punk podcasts while still definitely remaining in the punk scene and, you know, not kind of drifting away into pop or pop punk or anything like that. Could we improve? Sure, we can always improve. We definitely can use more females, and we've got some. We can always use more. We could probably be more diverse. But listen, man, we're getting better. We're grinding forward. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I've been watching way too much Deep Space Nine right now, because every time you say females, I hear it in a Ferengi voice. And that is not what you intended. I mean, I'll take your word for it that we're so good. I mean, negging on what we do is really my favorite hobby. I'm surprised that you didn't come down on me at some point today when you put out like your big hype statement on Twitter about recording this episode, and I responded with some sort of like meh. And I was just waiting for one of my messengers to like bloop in from John being like, "What the fuck?" But
it's coming, Adam. It's coming. Listen, so this is episode 450, and what we do on most of the 50s is we do a whole bunch of 5-minute interviews. As always, I think we're already late, or we're going to be late in a second, but we're going to talk to Tsunami Bomb, Quam, Jamie of Archie Comics, Laura of FDR Skate Park, Drew Getz, Crazy in the Brains, Erica Filamoca, Brian Wall, be the artist, Miguel Chev, Teenage Bottle Rocket, Danbert of Chumbawamba, and Adam, who's your guy real quick?
We're going to talk to the guys who are doing Side by Side Weekend, which is a festival.
All right. So, yeah. Let's give. And as always, these episodes are chaos because that's what we do with punk news. So a lot of people might not pick up. So listen, if they don't pick up, we're just going to have to roll with it. And let's give Dominic of Tsunami Bomb a call and maybe he'll answer. We'll find out.
Yeah, we're definitely not just pasting these together with pre-done interviews. We're just calling people for the next hour. So.
Yeah, I guess we probably should have pasted it together with pre-done interviews.
No, that is not the punk news way.
At least you could have asked them if they were interested in being interviewed.
Hello?
Oh, hey, Dominic, you are live on Punk News Podcast number 450, our inaugural guest, our lead guest here on the podcast. How are you tonight, Dominic?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Dom. We've been doing the podcast for 9 years. We're patting ourselves on the back. But let's pat you on the back for a minute. Dom, Tsunami Bomb, you guys are back. You guys are better than ever. I've seen you guys live twice. You're awesome. What's in the store for Tsunami Bomb? What do you got happening?
Well, congratulations on doing 9 years. Doing anything for 9 years in punk rock is pretty impressive. But
we are pretty impressive. I mean, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, that's pretty good. So what led to Tsunami Bomb coming back? It was actually Kung Fu Records' fault. They hit us up and wanted us to put out a collection of all of our early songs that had been out of print, all the 7-inches that had been out of print, everything. And they said, you know, people would like it. And they convinced us to do it. And all the members spoke about it and decided it was worth it. And that led to a conversation of wanting to play a couple shows behind that, so it didn't just show up in the store and go nowhere. And initially it was a bit of an issue because not everybody wanted to come back. But enough of us did, and it was one of those things where we contemplated trying to do something like Flag, where we had sort of a new version of the band. But in the end, it was just obvious that it was Tsunami Bomb to everyone that heard it, to everyone that was seeing us, what we were working on. So we just gave in and took it on. And we were only going to play a couple shows, but they went so well, we just kept going. So here we are.
Dom, you guys are very interactive with your fans, and that it's very easy for fans to reach out to you and you guys to respond directly. That can bend both ways. You know, sometimes like fans are like, oh, you know, these guys are cool guys. I'm a fan because they're nice and they're cool people. But sometimes people can get creepy. You know what I mean? How do you handle that, Dom?
Well, one of the ways that we do it, and I think it's kind of I think it kind of feels like sort of an old school way of doing it, I guess. But we've kind of created a situation where it's like not everyone can just reach out to us. It's not the easiest. Like, you have to really kind of get in to be a part of our, you know, we put a lot of energy into our street team, which we call the Bomb Squad. I know, but whatever. We came up with it 100 years ago. So the Tsunami Bomb Squad is a group of people, and there's like, we have both the mailing list that we interact with people directly. It works like a regular mailing list, but you can interact back with us and get into concerts for free or help us promote stuff. And then we hook up people who are a part of that with like stuff that you can't get elsewhere. We got a lot of plans with stuff coming out that'll be exclusive to that. We also have like a Facebook chat or chat group where people interact and you can reach us. So it's not like we put ourselves, it's not like we put our phone numbers out there and our emails and you can just hit us up. It's like you kind of have to go through a couple barriers and it's sort of a controlled environment. So it's like if it gets a little too weird, we can kind of shut it down. But you know what? We haven't had to, you know what I mean? Like, we generally let anybody have their say, you know, as long as you're like a reasonable, not psycho person. It's like you don't have to just be a yes man to get in there. You can talk to us and throw it out there. It's just, you know, we just try and put a couple checks and balances so it's not just like, all right, everybody, open season, you know? It gets a little crazy.
Dom, what's on the horizon for Tsunami Bomb? You guys got a tour coming up, or what have you been working on?
Well, we got a number of festivals this year. We're going to be on the West Coast Warped Tour. We're playing at Mountain View on July 21st. I don't know what stage we're playing on. I don't know anything other than we're actually going to be there. Much like Warped Tour, it's probably something we're going to find out all at once. We're going to be headlining. We're headlining with Mr. T Experience. We're headlining the Punk the Birds Festival in Chicago, or just outside of Chicago. Looking forward to that. And then we are going to be playing Fest again. And I'm super excited about that because we had an amazing time last year, which was our first time playing Fest. And it was awesome. And so we're really excited about being a part of it again. And that looks like to be when the album will be coming out. We have a brand new album called The Spine That Binds. It's coming out on Alternative Tentacles Records. And after that comes out, pretty much we get really prolific. We got a lot of new music coming out basically every season. We got a couple compilations and stuff that we're doing. We got 7 inches and some splits planned, and it's awesome. We got a lot. We're pretty much planned for releases all the way through fall 2020.
Dom, last question for you. So you mentioned Alternative Tentacles. You're kind of the head honcho or main guy over at Alternative Tentacles. What's that like? And working with Jello, is it the dream, the nightmare, or the both?
It's all of it. All of it wrapped into one. Because he is. Jello is a very good friend of mine. I love him to death. He's definitely an interesting guy. But I mean, I've stopped being able to predict him. The best thing I can say is I know a lot of people who know that I work at Alternative Tentacles are going to think that that's how Tsunami Bomb got hooked up there. But really, it was Jello who convinced me and my band to release on Alternative Tentacles. I didn't think he'd like it. I was like, nah, we're too poppy for you. I'm not going to show you this. I know you. You're not into that kind of stuff. And he was the one that kept asking. And I was like, you don't want to hear it. You're not going to like it. And he goes, and finally he got mad and he was like, fuck you, I signed Pansy Division. Is your band boring? Are you boring? Are you boring punk rock or are you good? Are you something good? Let me fucking hear it. And so I gave it to him and he loved it. And I would have sworn that he would not like it. And he convinced us to come over. And so now I work at the label that's putting out my band, and that's going to be a little crazy, but I mean, that's kind of what it is with Jello. He's sort of the unexpected, and it's amazing to be a part of a label that's been around for 40 years and pretty much does the unexpected. So I think it's a label people should take another look at, because there's a lot of really amazing stuff going on there.
Well, there you have it, Dom. Davi, not boring. Dom, nice to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take care. Congratulations on 9 years.
Thanks. All right, now we're going to call up Quam, Felicia, and Matt from Quam. As soon as I can figure out how to operate. Oh, here we go. All right, here we go. We're calling up Felicia and Matt from Quam right now.
Could you not hear, are you boring, in a Jello voice? Because I instantly heard that in a Jello voice.
Man, Jello's the greatest. He really is. All right, we're adding Felicia, and now we're also going to add Matt to the call. Let's see here. And we're already behind schedule, but listen, that's how we roll on the Punk News Podcast. So let's see here. 85. Oh, I should not say the name. Well, I think I shouldn't even have the dial tone, because I think people can like determine like the phone through the dial tone. You know what I mean?
There are people who can do that, but I doubt any of them are listening to us.
Are you sure?
No.
There was a time in the 80s when you could record dial tones and actually play them back into a payphone, and the payphone would pick them up and treat it as if the dial happened, like the sound actually mattered. It's pretty fucking cool.
I think Matt Quam is there. Matt, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Matt, what's happening? Hey, listen, we called Felicia, but I think she didn't answer.
Oh, no. Well, that's strange.
I'll dial again, but we can keep talking. Matt, Quam, you guys are up in Brooklyn. You guys just put out a fantastic record. But here's the thing. You guys have been kind of building to this for a while. I think the new record is fantastic. I think it capitalizes on the promise that you've shown before. But now that the record is out, how do you feel? You know, after you do a big accomplishment, sometimes there's a certain melancholy with that because that's Felicia from Quam. Felicia, I'm asking you and Matt this question here. You guys just put out the new album. Is there a certain melancholy with that? Because you guys have climbed the mountain. The album's fantastic. But the question is, now that we've accomplished our goal, what's next? How do you guys feel? Are you happy, sad, melancholy, mix of emotions? Where are you guys at?
Hey, so I guess what we sort of started on this summer was trying to figure out what we wanted to do musically, and what we sort of came to was like the thing that we love about the last album is that it's silly and it's like fun and fast. And this next one, we want to like keep the energy of that, but somehow, I don't want to say like graduate or like just have less dumb humor in it, if that makes sense, and like become and like say a little bit more of what we really want to say, versus just having these sort of like little jokes and gimmicks and stuff. So I guess like bringing it a little more grounded. I think we're trying to get a little more grounded. And so this summer we're spending some time writing and seeing how we can like discover that together. And so far it's been really nice. We've had a few sessions and it's like, I feel really good about it. We're kind of with some stuff.
Here's a question for you guys. You know, in your guys' music videos, you're all hanging out. When I saw you guys drive down, you're all hanging out. Quam, are you guys all good friends or are you working associates?
I'd say we're definitely good friends.
Absolutely. I can't work with people I'm not friends with.
So here's the question. The Ramones famously hated each other and they made some of the greatest music of all time. Does being friends I challenge the creative process, if you will?
Wait, say that one more time.
So the Ramones made some of the greatest music of all time, and they hated each other. Black Flag pretty much hated each other. Being friends challenge the creative process?
Oh, totally. Well, Matt and I fight all the time.
Yeah.
But in a way that I think has helped, like, move us forward, or, like, just, like, we're learning. It's like, yeah, like, when something goes on for years, like, you're doing a collaborative process that lasts for literal years, it's like you're going to run into things. You're going to, like, when you're on tour, when you're in a band with someone for 24 hours a day every day, some people's worst qualities are going to come out and their best qualities are going to come out. And I feel like that's cool, because then you're just learning about each other. And I feel like Matt and I, like, I mean, we have some, like, troubles here and there. But, like, I think the important thing is that we still really, like, work, like, doing the art itself together, and we love performing together. And so, like, whatever's personal is, like, it doesn't, I mean, we'll, like, yeah, and then, we'll work on working through that.
And when you're already, like, friends with people, you have, like, a kind of a steady base, where the whatever you're creating, like, this music we're creating, like, happens above that. And so you can always, like, if whatever's happening in the world of Quam is tough or difficult or something, we can always, like, still just be friends underneath that. And it's like a safety net, like a barrier. It's like a nice thing to fall back on always.
Literally, there's been a time where I rode my bike away from Matt yelling, "You're still one of my best friends." You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's like the friendship thing's always there for sure.
A recurring theme in Quam's album, which I like, was the concept of being an outsider, not being accepted by society. And I find that hard to believe, because I've seen Quam live twice, and they're all very cool and stylish people. So I find it hard to believe that you guys are outsiders. Are you guys truly outsiders? Are you too weird even for the weirdos? That's the question.
I guess I'll try to answer that. So it's just sort of a thing where, not to be dramatic, I guess, but, like, most of my life, I've sort of always done my own thing. Like, I've never, like, not that I've been, like, a full-on outcast, like, able to be friends with people, but I've always had parts of myself that people found a little strange or a little weird. Like, I've always been to horror movies. I've always been into, like, punk music and hardcore music. And it's, like, to the normal teenage girl, that wasn't necessarily the thing everyone was into. So, in terms of that, but I think also a lot of our songs are about how that has, I mean, that's helped me as a person. Like, one of our songs, Can't Talk About It, says, "I miss when they called me a freak," where there's times where it's like, I feel like in certain ways, as I've gotten older, I've gotten more normal, which I actually think is not helpful to my creativity. So sometimes I gotta go back inside myself and be like, just let your inner freak be weird, and, like, then you'll probably make something good, you know?
Quam, last question. What do you guys have in the works? What should we expect from you guys next?
Matt?
Oh, okay. Maybe there might be a single song coming late this summer. Just kind of like a little Lucy that we'll be throwing out into the world. Maybe, you know, we're talking about trying to do Europe next year. And then maybe, like, an album late next year or something. Because we're already writing that one. So, yeah, I think that's in the works right now. A couple shows coming up, too.
Well, fair enough, people. Quam have an excellent new self-titled album out. You should check him out. Quam, thanks for being on Punk News Podcast number 450.
Woo. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. So that was Quam. And now we're going to call Jamie Lee Rotante of Archie Comics. Let's give her a call. Adam and Tom, what's happening? What's going on? How you guys doing?
I'm amazed that this is going as smoothly as it is so far. We have yet to have...
we're only 5 minutes behind.
I mean, there's still lots of room for us to fuck it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a lot more of you to do. So we're calling up Jamie right now. Do you guys ever read Archie Comics?
Hello.
Oh, hi. This is Jamie. Welcome to Punk News Podcast number 450. It's John, Tom, and Adam. Jamie, how are you?
Hello.
Jamie, you know, we've got 5 minutes here. We're so happy that you're on the podcast. Jamie, you are a big shot in that you write for Archie Comics. How did you get into comic books? Jamie, how did you get into comic books?
How did I get into just in general or into Archie?
How did you get into the industry, if you will, of comic book
production? Yeah, no problem. So I was a big fan of Archie pretty much my whole life. And I didn't realize that they're one of the few publishers that isn't in, like, a major city. They were actually pretty local to me. So right out of college, once I realized, like, hey, I can get to this place pretty easily. I didn't realize they were right around the corner. I went for an internship. And from there, I just kind of worked my way up in the ranks, up to doing editorial work and then eventually writing.
You know, Archie's been around for, what, 60 years, 70 years, something like that?
Over 75.
Over 70. And you know, a lot of comic book heroes have come and gone, or comic book series. Why do you think Archie speaks so much to the American readership? And Archie's in a revival right now. Why is Archie important to readers, if you will?
I think it's just because everyone knows that experience of being a teenager. At the end of the day, they're teenagers and they fit these sort of perfect types. You have Archie, who's clumsy, Jughead's love of burgers and his laid-back attitude. Betty and Veronica as two best friends, sometimes frenemies. It's just such archetypes that you can plug into any situation that no matter where you put them, they work.
Now, you've written several Betty and Veronica series. I think the first one was Vixens, where it's Betty and Veronica in a biker gang, right?
Correct.
So why did Betty and Veronica and their friendship appeal to you? Because honestly, comic books focused on friendships, really, there's not that many. You know what I mean? Maybe Batman and Superman is friends, but they're not really friends. So I like that you have Betty and Veronica as pals going out there on adventures. Why did you select Betty and Veronica as who you wanted to write for?
I think exactly because of that. You don't see friendship in comics too much. And growing up reading Betty and Veronica, I found myself drawn to the stories where they're friends more so than when they're fighting over Archie. So to be able to tell stories that focus on their friendship and keep that aspect of it going just seems so appealing to me.
And actually, you bring up a great issue. You know, Archie, you said, is from 75 years ago, and certain cultural norms from 75 years ago maybe aren't as cultural norms now, you know? And so I guess... Has Archie had it? I mean, I think Archie's actually done a pretty good job of dealing with that. But is that a concern? You know, Betty and Veronica fighting over Archie, that's maybe one aspect of the personality, but not the sole aspect of the personality, you know?
Right.
So that was
actually it for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I said, no, that was totally it for me. Like, that was something, and, you know, back when it first started, that was hilarious. That was something we could do a lot with. But over time, that aspect of it started to kind of take a little bit of a backseat, but it was still there. And I just really wanted to focus on the other sides of it.
So why a biker? I mean, I love the idea that they're bikers. So why are they bikers and not, you know, I don't know, professional wrestlers or fencers or something like that? You know what I mean?
That's fair. That's a good question. I never really thought about anything else. It kind of started from the original idea I had that wasn't really set in stone, which is something I was playing with, was like Betty and Veronica and like the rest of their friends are cheerleaders by day and a gang at night. But it just like kind of evolved from there where it would be like, what would be cooler if they're just like a gang or if they're a biker gang? And then you take them to these new places by doing that. And then like the style and, you know, sort of the music and the culture around that just drew to it more.
Jamie, just a couple last questions for you. If someone wants to break into comics, how would they go about that? Or is it kind of like music journalism and there is no one path and you just kind of have to find your own way?
I don't think there's one clear path. I think everybody can carve their own way. The best thing you could do is read comics, I don't think you need to have an encyclopedia of knowledge of every superhero comic that exists. Find what appeals to you, find the story you want to tell, and then network, meet who you can who's in it, and just keep trying.
Fair enough. Jamie, last question. I know you put out Betty and Veronica's Vixens, which I got, and which is it's cool. It's hilarious. I like it a lot. But you also have a new series coming out, you're in the middle of a new series, right?
We just wrapped up Betty and Veronica's senior year, but the graphic novel will be coming out in the fall.
Fantastic. Well, Jamie, listen, thanks for being on. Sometime we'll do a longer interview, and I really appreciate you being on Punk News Podcast number 450.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Cheers. Talk to you later.
Bye.
All right. I bet you guys have never talked to a creative Archie comic books before, have you? How about that? And now, keeping the wheel theme alive, we're going to talk to Lauren of the FDR Skate Park. Maybe I should talk about who these people are before we call them. Lauren is in Trash Knife. Lauren is in Trash Knife, but she also runs and kind of operates FDR Skate Park. So she's like one of the chief skateboarders in the Philadelphia area. She probably won't like me saying that because like skateboarding's got its whole culture, but I'm saying she's one of the chief skateboarders. You know what I mean? And she's also in Trash Knife.
Hello?
Lauren, you are on Punk News Podcast number 450 with John, Adam, and Tom. Lauren, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Lauren, I was just saying to the guys that you are one of the baddest ass skateboarders that I know. And you and I, well, I asked you, I said, so do you run FDR Skate Park? And you were quick to correct me and said, no, I don't run FDR Skate Park. I contribute to FDR Skate Park. So tell me, what is FDR Skate Park and how is it, I guess, organized? Because to me, it just seems like a chaotic zone where people can come and do what they want. Maybe that's the deal. What's the deal with FDR Skate Park?
I guess it's more like a utopia that actually works. I feel like it runs a lot like an Indian tribe. You know, there's definitely like people who kind of run it, you know, just the old heads who built it back in the day and made it happen. They definitely were renegade back then. Nobody cared about, you know, the lakes, essentially FDR, the park, you know, even like 10 years ago, people were dumping there all the time. It wasn't like this beautiful place to go hang out. You know, it's kind of like where people went to like do, you know, discreet things, I guess. But yeah, it's definitely an amazing place that, you know, you watch people build big, huge, amazing concrete structures. You know, I don't know. It's pretty rad. It's DIY.
I've seen Lauren in effect raising funds and getting them. And actually, I've seen, listen, fellas, Lauren is a young lady that knows how to get something done. I was at a fundraiser there. These people came. They didn't have a table. She's like, wait 2 seconds. And she whipped up a table in about 30 seconds. She built a table like that. No problem. Lauren, why is skateboarding important?
I mean, personally, for me, it taught me so much about, you know, like I probably wouldn't have been able to build that table unless I had spent so much time down there working with people, learning how to build in a different, you know, in a different way, like working with whatever you have and making it happen any way that you can. And skateboarding in itself, like I learned how to like learn, period. When you accomplish something that you're afraid of, you feel really good about yourself. You know, you feel like on top of the world, and it's something personal, like, you know, everybody skates at their own rate, and it's definitely very rewarding, let alone all the people that it exposed me to. Like, it's definitely like a type of person, but it's not like a clothing style or a music style or something. It's like something deep inside of you that like draws you towards it. And so you get to interact with those people as well.
Laura, I'd like you to comment on the punk rock skateboarding connection, because there's kind of two views. The one view is that, you know, punk rock and skateboarding go hand in hand and that they're kind of one culture or on the spectrum of the same culture. And then there's kind of the I guess, counterattack in that skateboarding is just jocks on wheels. You know what I mean? And so I'm curious as to how are skateboarding and punk connected, either conceptually, thematically, or are they opposed to each other?
You know, I think, you know, the history of skateboarding, you know, more often back in the day, it was an escape. It was a renegade thing. It was a rebellion. It was something that people did and weren't necessarily rewarded by being cool. And I think, you know, punk rock has that same history and involves a lot of like, you know, expressing yourself and being who you are, being true to yourself. And I think, you know, skateboarding as a sport, I think you do have to be athletic and you do have to, you know, put time and energy. But essentially, you know, there's so much creativity, especially like when you watch like street skaters, you know, they're turning everyday objects into, you know, an obstacle course, you know, a fun, you know, essentially a grown-up Chuck E. Cheese. And then, you know, same thing even with like a skate park, you know, you get creative with the lines and, you know, you can... You know, there's so much graffiti down there and beauty and, you know, just alternative art. I think expressing yourself is like the common factor. I think people are always seeking something that they can identify with. And I think sometimes that skateboarding does go hand in hand. And I think, you know, everything has its own tentacles for sure. But to the heart of it, it's all about expressing yourself, I think.
Well, Lauren, I put a bit of a hurdle in front of you, and you got over that hurdle like it was 2 inches high. Excellent answer. Now, you're also the front person for Trash Knife, one of my favorite Philadelphia punk bands, and you are one of the greatest front persons in Philadelphia, without question. What does Trash Knife mean to you?
I don't know. I think it's, you know, everybody in my band's pretty awesome. You know, they've become great friends. It's like, a really interesting relationship.
They offered, you know, they just started out and they're like, we need a singer. And I was like, cool. And, you know, that's very intimidating. And I had never officially written a song or even knew what that really entailed. But it was cool because it made me, once I had to like sit down and write music, like lyrics, it made me realize I had something to say. You know, I always have something to say, but that, you know, it was really interesting to have an opportunity to like, be like, no, this is what I want to say and this is how I want to say it. And then, you know, I definitely was intimidated to be up front in front of people. And I think I still am. And I definitely, you know, I look at like drag shows and how they, you know, incorporate like, you know, their outfit and all their surroundings and get the, you know, the crowd involved. I think that's really interesting. And I think I would love to get better at that, like to really make it all encompassing, like performance and truly, you know, people to walk away with a feeling and almost like I definitely, if I could spread one thing, I would want people to feel free to be themselves and get weird because at the end, it doesn't matter, you know, what anyone thinks.
Lauren, last question. You are playing Summer Soiree 3 with World Inferno and Joe Jack Talcum and also Street Vengeance, which is Chip of Pure Hell. Three bands that are very different than you. Are you nervous? Are you excited? How are you feeling prepping opening for the Mighty World Inferno Friendship Society and the Mighty Joe Jack Talcum?
You know, I think usually I just try to not think too much into it and, you know, appreciate, you know, and be honored and, you know, realize that maybe that this opportunity has come this way because, you know, we're equals in a light. I mean, most every human is. And I think the more that I realize that in myself, the better me that I can be. And the more I appreciate myself, the better I can be. And I think that I shouldn't let myself be intimidated by that, but definitely be stoked and honored for sure. And have a good time, you know, I'm just am excited to party.
They listen, people, Lauren of FDR Skate Park and Trash Knife dropping pearls of wisdom. The more I appreciate myself, the better that I can be. Lauren, thank you for being on the Punk News Podcast, and we will talk again soon.
All right, man. You rule so hard, for sure. Thank you so much.
Back at you. Talk to you later.
All right.
How'd you guys like that? Lauren dropping some street poetry there. How'd you guys like that? The more I appreciate myself, the better I can be. What do you guys think of that?
I like the name of her band. Too many band names really suck. Trash Knife is a good name for a band.
Trash Knife was a part of the big Pete from P-Trash tribute record that went out recently too. So that's a very cool thing to be involved with.
That's true. There's actually,
I don't know what you're talking about, Adam.
There's a deep connection between that band and also the label that put that out for P-Trash. But right now, and we'll talk about that next episode, perhaps.
We have no time for context.
Here we are with Rachel of the Drugettes. Rachel, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm actually at practice. Could I put you on speakerphone?
Please do.
What could possibly go wrong?
Hang on.
Okay, so we're talking to Rachel and Ginger and Jen and Elijah from Drugettes, one of my favorite bands and one of my favorite Philly punk bands for sure, and just one of my favorite overall bands. Are you guys there on speakerphone? All right, Drugettes, listen, you've put out the new album. The new album is great. That came out last year. It was without question one of my favorite PUNK records of the last year, and really one of my favorite PUNK records of the last 10 or 15 years. You gals are punk and awesome. So here's the question. What do you do after that? What do you do after you put out a record that capitalizes on all the prompts that you've built up through your previous singles and EPs?
Well, now my plan is to put out a really mediocre record because so many bands that I love had that great first album, and I want to be just like them. So I'm working hard on a lot of mediocre songs right now. But the
classic,
third album.
Classic sophomore slump. That's a good idea.
You know, what I like about the Drugettes is there's a lot of different viewpoints espoused and a lot of different concepts. There's classic oi, there's classic punk, but there's also things that you wouldn't expect to hear or that I might not expect to hear. What should we, the listener, take from Drugettes? Here's the question. Are you guys deliberately playing towards genre? Are you playing away from genre? Or is that not even a consideration?
It's not really a consideration. I don't think any of us think about genre at all. We just play what we want to play.
And that's...
We have we have our influences, but when the four of us come together, I mean, I write a song, but then everybody else kind of adds their spices to the recipe, and it ends up having a very unique sound. I mean, Jen doesn't really sound like anyone. Eliza's guitar has a sound that I could hear two notes of, and I know it's her playing. Like, it just, I mean, we definitely have bands that we love to death, but, you know, it's kind of, you throw everything in the pot and then add off, and it sounds like it sounds.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. When the first time I saw the Drugettes, you guys were opening for Tsunami Bomb, and the first couple of songs, I hated you guys. I hated you. And then by the end, I absolutely loved you. And Jen, I don't know if you remember this. I came up to you and bought a CD from you right afterwards. I said, should I buy the white CD? And you're like, no, get the split with Vice Squad. So the point being is, Drugettes can be very polarizing. And I think that's probably a great thing. But why do you think the Drugettes strike such a chord with a lot of people, both positive and negative?
I don't know, but the first time I met you, I kind of hated you, and then all of a sudden I like you, and we're like best friends now.
Ginger, why do you hate me? I'm curious.
I was joking. It's that you're a Corvette.
Well, the thing is, there's so many bands that just, their songs are almost like a, am I allowed to curse or no?
By all means, Rachel, let it rip.
Okay, I want to get fined by the FCC like Howard Stern used to. I mean, a lot of bands, especially in the oi genre, sadly, their songs could be a mad lib. You know, they sing about, they use this adjective, this noun, this verb, brotherhood, working class. And it's just, so phoned in. Like, it's just, I don't know. That's why classic bands have been so good. And then these bands that just, like, are this facsimile of what they think they're supposed to be is kind of, it doesn't do anything for me. And I never wanted to follow that. And I know that's what pisses people off because, oh my God, they're not following the blueprint that I've carried in my pocket and my Levi's for the last 15 years. I'm very pissed off and I'm going to write about that on the internet. But like, that's just boring to death. Like, I didn't want to try to be a dude and sing like a dude and pretend I was from England and, you know, like drink beer. And I love that music, but I filtered it through my life and my experiences and what I really loved. And of course, it's going to sound different. And some people, you know, love that. And some people make them very uncomfortable. It's like that line that Viv Albertine said, where they don't know if they want to kill you or fuck you, like kind of get both extremes.
Well, I would argue that most hatred comes from a place of deep love or deep envy. You know what I mean? There's people I don't like or bands I don't like, but I just don't care about them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You don't spend so much time, unless you're really just a strange person. Like, you don't spend so much time on something you hate. Like, why? Like, you're a fucking moron if you're doing that.
What a waste of time.
Drugettes, what do you have in the works? Because you guys put out an album last year, Clockwork Girls, which was great, on Violated Records. So what's up next? A single, an EP, a new album? What are you guys working on?
Hopefully a new album. We're starting to write some music now. So that's what's in the works right now. Some new songs coming out.
We recorded some songs a couple months ago. So we're not sure where it's going right now.
Drugettes, last question.
Record more or put those out.
Drugettes, last question, and thanks for being on the podcast. What do you hope the listeners take from the Drugettes?
Take from us? I hope not my keys.
How should I be moved emotionally by the Drugettes music? What's the dream?
The song is unwritten. It is for you to take whatever you want. I could tell you from start to end what all these songs are about, but it doesn't really matter. It's whatever anybody takes. I mean, I think of punk songs I listened to when I was a kid before you get the Clash lyrics in the damn album, and I used to think they were saying totally different things than they were, but, you know, it somehow got through my sick skull, and it made an impact on me. So I think people should just take whatever the heck they want. Do what you want to do, live your life, and honestly, when you're dead, you're not really going to care what people talk about you or the shit they say, because you have to live your life. You have to be true to yourself.
There you have it. Rachel the Jew Getz giving advice that walks the line between Joe Strummer and Aesop himself and Nick Glinko. Gauss, thanks for the interview, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, John. Have a good one, John.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was the Jew Getz. And next we're going to talk to one of my other favorite bands, Crazy in the Brains.
And those guys had some great accents, hey, John? Is that Philadelphia accent?
With the Jugettes, there's four Jugettes. You get the melange of the range of the Philadelphia accents.
Wow,
I've been told that I've got a Philadelphia accent, but I don't feel that way. But maybe I do, and I just don't hear it.
Nah, you don't have. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Bring on the xylophones, baby.
We're calling Crazy in the Brains, Jersey City's finest. And Christoph, you are on Punk News Podcast number 450. How you doing? There we go. We're online with all of Crazy in the Brains. Crazy in the Brains, you know, your music is very fun. It's very exciting, but you deal with some very dark issues in your music. So I guess what should we take from this, I would say, juxtaposition, happy sounding music with a very dark core?
What should you take from it? Hello?
Yes, what should I take from it, Chris?
Well, hopefully you get something positive from it, because that's what it's meant to do. And some positive light on some darker situations and darker topics, things that we go through.
One of the things that I love about Crazy in the Brains is no one is like you guys. I mean, you guys are weird. You rock. There's no one like you. Is that by design? Did you guys look around and said, we need to do something different? Or is this just what manifested when you guys got together and decided to record?
I mean, we try to bring out the most of ourselves that we can, you know, and try not to copy too much on what's already been done, you know? This is just kind of us. So I think it's just natural.
Now you guys recently played the Summer Chimera where you backed SZA Crack, which was very exciting for me. That was the second time you guys did that. What was that like for you? Was that a challenge? Was it scary? Or was it like, we're the champs, we got this?
Brett's here. I think it was the biggest challenge for him because he had to learn all the bass lines. Brett.
Yeah, but that's true. But it was a little scary because that SZA was scaring me.
Yeah, it was scary. It was a challenge, but it was fun. You know, and we were honored to do it because we're fans of Soaking Victim and Leftover Crack, and it was awesome. We had a great time. We'll do it again.
Well, hopefully next year. We'll see. Punk, you know, what's the you know, there's two ways to look at punk rock. There's one way to say punk rock, you know, it's doing the same thing over and over. We've seen it before. And another viewpoint is punk rock is alive and vibrant and wonderfully weird. What's your stance on punk rock or your punk scene as a whole right now?
I think it's alive and vibrant. I don't think it ever went anywhere, ever going anywhere. You know, you just got to look in the right places. And I think the shows that you put on kind of showcase some of the best parts of punk rock, you know, all different types of groups doing different types of things, different perspectives. So we're just trying to, you know, show where we're coming from and our punk, you know. Our punk might not be the same as some other kids' punk, but that's the coolest part about it, I think. And yeah, it's here to stay, I think.
Second to last question. You guys have incorporated Nina Simone into your music, Biggie Smalls into your music, Moldy Peaches into your music. Let's look at Nina Simone. Why is Nina Simone an important figure?
We just love her music, you know what I mean? Like, she's sort of like, in my opinion and our opinion, like, a punk before there was punk. She followed no rules. She was unfiltered, and she was a boss, and she stood up for the things that mattered. And the music is just great. You know what I mean? I don't even know. Like, it's just, she's one of my favorite artists, and we all love her. We covered one of her songs live a bunch of times, and we're supposed to record. Well, we did record it, and we're gonna put that out at some point soon. But yeah, we love Nina Simone.
Last question: What's in store for Crazy in the Brains? Are you guys going on tour? Are you working on new recordings? Oh, and also, listeners, you've got to check out their newest album, Into the Ugly. That album is fantastic. I mean, that album is really fantastic. I think it's their best thing to date. It rocks. But what do you guys have in the works aside from the new album that came out about 6 months ago?
Thank you for those kind words, Johnny. Into the Ugly, yeah. Speaking of darkness. That's probably the darkest that we've gotten as far as content and all that. But yeah, that's our last album. We're working on a new one right now. And we plan on touring this summer and into the fall. We might be going to Australia, which would be pretty cool. Just more music, spreading the love more.
Well, there you have it, Crazy in the Brains, one of my all-time favorite bands of all time. Crazy in the Brains, thanks for being on the podcast. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks, dude.
Woohoo!
And that was Crazy in the Brains, and I'm going to take a little bit of a rest here while Adam White gives a call to the Side by Side organization.
Yeah, am I dialing this, or are you dialing this?
I'll dial it for you, and you guys can talk.
Good, because I don't understand how any of this works. You gotta tell me when it picks up, though, because I don't
know. Oh, yeah, okay. You guys go ahead and talk, and I'll dial.
So, Adam, John's a dynamo, huh? The guy never...
John hasn't screwed up yet, so now I'm here, so now I can screw it up, right? See?
Yeah.
Just, like, letting some dead air.
I gotta say, we're doing actually all right. I mean, chaos-wise, we're only 3 minutes behind.
No, when I say we, I mean you, John. Hello? Are doing very well.
And hey. There's Side by Side.
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad.
Yeah, that's going good.
Yeah, we're doing good. We are, what, like 5, 7, 9 interviews in? I don't even know. I haven't been doing most of them. I've just been sitting around listening, so this is my first time driving this episode. So I'm going to totally fuck this up, but
let's keep it going.
I wanted to talk to people about Side by Side Weekend only. A, because it's really cool, but B, because this podcast, which has been going on for like 9 years at this point, the Ottawa Explosion Festival has been like a frequent topic on here. And it started by like years of me pining that I should go to this festival, but not for some reason managing to do that. And then me finally doing it and then gushing about, you know, all the cool shit that I saw there. So Side by Side, this is going to be the first year for it, and this is going to be the first year that we don't have an Ottawa Explosion. So I can't imagine those two things are a coincidence there. So, like, why was it so important to kind of get this together and fill that void?
I guess it is, like, to fill the void as well, but aside from Explosion calling it quits after last year, this was something I'd always wanted to do. So after having been involved with Ottawa Explosion, like working for them or volunteering in some capacity over a number of years, that fest had a huge impact on me. And when they announced last year that 2018 was the last year of the fest, I was like, well, fuck, maybe let's give this a go. So at this point I've been like working at Black Squirrel Books as like the booker and event coordinator there. And like working there has like just really helped me like build the confidence to be like, yo, maybe now is a good time to give this a go.
So let's talk about Black Squirrel and its neighboring venue, House of Targ. So this is called Side by Side Weekend, specifically because these two venues, they are right next door to each other on Bank Street in Ottawa. For people that haven't been, give them a little rundown about, you know, what's Black Squirrel about? What's Targ about?
Okay, so Black Squirrel Books is a used bookstore, a cafe, and an event space. We're licensed as well, and we host all kinds of shows from like funk shows to like comedy shows and like jazz bands to like experimental noise music. We've done like book launches, and all kinds of other events. It's a really versatile space, and it's really fun. And I'm really stoked that we're able to do so much. And like House of Targ are the best neighbors to have. They're like such great people, and like the best venue in town, in my opinion. And it's been really awesome to work with them on a few of these like one-off side-by-side gigs, which kind of like built towards doing a side-by-side weekend as a fest. So it's amazing being their neighbors, and I'm really stoked for the fest.
Yeah, if anyone's never heard of Targ before, it's a basement venue that has like a full like old school video arcade in it, and is also doubles pierogi restaurant.
All the pinball.
Pierogies and pinball and punk rock is what's happening down there. I wanted to talk a little bit about the lineup for this. So who do you have coming out? Who's playing side by side?
Oh, a whole bunch of bands I'm really, really excited about. Some of the bigger headliners, I guess, like Steve Adamick Band, who've been a band for years and years. They played Explosion a bunch, and they're just like stalwarts and really lovely guys. I'm really excited that Ottawa band Bondar are reuniting after 5 years of not playing a show. I don't know if they're doing much after the fest, but they're playing this, and it's gonna be sick. So I'm really stoked for that. Other bands like D-Boy, Life in Vacuum, like really, really solid live bands. I'm really excited. Like Walmart from Toronto, Stad Baxter from Nashville. There's so many I'm really excited for.
Yeah, one of the really nice things about this lineup is, and this was true back of Explosion too, is that it brings together all of these people from across Canada that have this community but live nowhere near each other. So you've got bands on here like Future Girls out of Halifax, and you know Cell out of Montreal, and you know. All these people know each other, and they all hang out, but they all live like 15 hours apart. It is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's always so fun to be around any and all of those folks. Like Sal and Future Girls are great examples of just like really lovely people who also just happen to be in really cool bands. One band I'm particularly excited for from the Maritimes is Bossfly from Halifax. They've been to Ottawa a couple times, and they're just like the best. The best people, and I hope people go watch their set.
All right, well, we're doing 5 minutes, so I'm sure that we're close to burning that. So thank you so much for coming on here. Where do people find out about Side by Side if they want to come check it out?
Oh yeah, look up Side by Side Weekend on Facebook and Instagram. The whole schedule is there. We got some limited weekend passes available, so hop on it if you're into it, and I hope to see you there. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So Side by Side is July 25th through 28th, so that's when it's going on. So we are a month out right now, so good luck.
Hell yeah. Almost there, baby. Thanks.
And that was Side by Side, and now we're going to call Eric of Philomoka. Eric runs a venue in Philadelphia called Philomoka, which is where we had Summer Soiree 1 and we also had World Inferno Weekend there, and we're going to have Summer Soiree 3 there. And the cool thing about Philomoka is it's actually more of a film house where they show movies, and they throw concerts there on the weekend. What I really like about it is it's basically DIY, but it's all ages. It's not a bar, and it's a venue that's not a bar, which is great for throwing a show there. And it's got excellent sound and is an excellent venue. So we're calling Eric from Philomoka right now, and we'll see if he picks up.
Can we ask him about...
Can you not drink in there?
Let's not answer that question when Eric picks
okay,
up.
Okay, so we'll talk about... That'll require a small amount of editing.
Oh my gosh,
I see John's head.
Well, let's see. We'll try Eric in a little while. Let's call Brian Walsby right now, and I'm coming up on the video.
Turn the camera off. Oh, God.
And there's nothing I can do about that. So let's see here. We're going to give Brian Walsby a call. Brian Walsby is a punk. He is the punk rock artist. He's been doing punk rock art for about 30 years. He's been in a bunch of bands, and he tours with the Melvins a lot and does his art there. But he was in. I can see Tom as well.
Well, let me turn the video off. I'm just chilling. Oh, now I'm gone.
All right, but we're calling Brian Walsby right now.
It's just like I just see like from your nose up, John. I've never had a visual element. I don't know what to make of this.
We'll see if Brian answers, and we're calling right now. Brian was in Davidians. He was in Wax, which was a band. Brian, you're on Punk News Podcast number 450. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How are you?
Good. Well, Brian, listen, It's a pleasure to have you on. Brian, we've met a couple of times. I think we've done two interviews. If the listeners don't know Brian, they should. Brian is a legend. He's done a lot of art in punk rock. He did the Nardcore compilation. He did the 7 Seconds cover. He's done a bunch of art for the Melvins. He's done some art for, let's see. Oh, he did art for D. Cruising a little bit. He did the Still Having Their Say work. But what I really like about Brian's work is he's a big fan of, I guess, taking other works and, I guess you could say, perverting them or bending them to his own use. He'll take album covers and rework album covers, or he'll take memes even and draw the meme and then kind of distort that meme. So my question is, Brian, what's the value or what's the purpose in taking previously established visuals or things that have a longstanding meaning and then bending them to your own use?
It's probably a combination of sheer laziness on my part and ripping off other people. No, I don't know. It's fun to do that. It's kind of like a sort of a Mad Magazine influence kind of thing too. And that was like a big influence for me a long time ago. Plus, you know, these days everybody takes things and redoes things and they remake movies and all kinds of stuff. So, it's fun. You know, it's something I enjoy. And in the case of, like when I go on tour with the Melvins, I'm preparing, you know, for anybody that, the millions of people that don't know this, I had a job selling merchandise for them on their behalf. And as part of the deal, they let me sell whatever I want. So over the years, I've been able to like think of this idea of just like taking homemade posters and just making parody Melvins posters involving everything from like, you know, say the Black Flag My War cover to Bob Dylan covers and putting them in there. And I'll make like hundreds of them and manage to sell all those. And that's like a big aspect of the parody thing. And it just kind of, I guess, got carried away in every other aspect of what I do. Not everything, but I used to do a lot of cartoons, but I don't really have as much time to do that stuff like comic series since my daughter came along. So I have to work on these like short little things. So it seems like most of the time these days, it's going to be those sort of things that you just mentioned. John,
Brian, you know, you're a working guy. You do you do an insane volume of art, but you also have a daughter. And you know, there's often the image of the artist, like this distraught guy that sleeps till 7 p.m., gets up, drinks, and then paints till 4 a.m. How important is discipline if you are a working artist like yourself?
Well, it's pretty hard because if you don't have the discipline, you're not going to get anything done. But like, you know, like a lot of the times I'm not even really thinking that I have discipline. I have to just sort of look back, you know, after a period of time and go, oh, did I do all that stuff? Oh, I guess I did. And then I think, well, how, you know, how was I able to do that? Because I don't generally do anything when my daughter is around and she has to be asleep or something. And I don't have her, you know, all the time. I just have her half awake. So when I don't have her, that's sort of when I like, you know, pour it on and try to do stuff. And then when I do have her, I just hang out with her and do stuff with her and then wait till she goes to sleep and then usually do stuff, you know, during that period. So I guess I must have some discipline, but I'm just not really thinking about it. You know, like to me, I often just think, oh, I'm not doing enough. And then I'll think about that, thinking that, and I'll just go, that's crazy. I've done all this stuff, you know. So I guess discipline must come into it, but it's not something I'm really, you know, I'm not really thinking that. I'm disciplined, you know. But yeah, I mean, obviously you do need discipline because otherwise you're not going to do anything.
Brian, you mentioned Mad Magazine earlier. I love Mad Magazine. But here's the question. Is, you know, people often speak about comic art and then fine art. Is there truly a distinction between Mad Magazine style art and, say, you know, Rembrandt or Degas? Is there any line between those two, or it's all the same thing?
Well, you know, it's probably all the same thing. There's different styles of the same thing and millions of different techniques. But, you know, if you're if you're thinking about doing something and it comes out of your brain and you're sitting there in front of a canvas or an iPad or a piece of paper or whatever, then, you know, you're tapping into the same thing, you know. I mean, I certainly wouldn't equate what I'm doing with, you know, Picasso or anything like that. But at the same time, it's still sort of the same thing. You're just, you know, art and music and that kind of stuff, those are the things that make, you know, life bearable. That's why people get so into what they're into, you know, like whether it's music or art or movies or whatever, because that's the kind of stuff that makes people feel like they're alive. So I think there's some thread that must run throughout, you know, that's the same for everything, but, you know, it's the same thing, but I don't know if I would really necessarily compare, other than it's just the same sort of thought process of thinking of something to do and being creative enough to do it.
And Brian, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. And, okay, so, you know, how good or bad it is just sort of in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
Brian, just a couple of last questions for you. I'm extremely impressed by your level of output and also the quality of your output. But the question is, there's two stances. The one stance is, don't, if you're good at something, don't do it unless you're getting paid to do it. And there's the other stance is, never get paid to do what you love. So is there ever a fear of burning out on art or getting tired of doing art? Or are you just a dynamo and the more work you do, the more excited you get?
Well, it's kind of like the last part of what you said. You know, it's like, I can't really do anything else. I you know, like, I have to make this work for the rest of my life. This is all I really wanted to do, and I'm doing it. You know, I'm not, like, stockpiling millions of dollars or whatever, but, you know, I've gotten to the point where I've turned this into, like, some sort of half-assed trade, and people will actually contact me and give me money to draw stuff. You know, so I try not to take that lightly, you know. So, you know, I understand the idea that people have where they want to keep the art separately, and just have, like, you know, maybe they were smarter than some people when we got careers or jobs to where they don't have to really ever be in that position. And that's totally admirable and fine, of course, but that's, you know, that's not me. You know, so I have to keep thinking of ways to make it work and keep it going. And, you know, like, if somebody contacts me and wants me to draw them something, even if it's not something that I'm particularly excited about, that person still reached out and thought enough about what I was doing to offer me money in exchange of drawing something, no matter what I think of it. So, you know, I'm not really much of an quote-unquote artist in that way, if that makes sense.
Well, Brian, I certainly think you – oh, I see what you're saying, but I think you are a phenomenal artist in any regard. I've got a couple of your works that I got from you on the Melvins tour. If you go see the – you should go see the Melvins, and when you go see the Melvins, get some of Brian's books, but also his drawings. You can buy drawings from Brian at the Melvins shows, which are really cool. Brian, where can we check out your work, or how should we contact you if you want to check out some of your stuff?
Well, like most morons, I'm on Facebook. So, you know, I try to get away from that, but that unfortunately seems to be how people contact, each other. So it's, you know, I have a page under my name on Facebook, and I have an Instagram page, and I have a website that's not really updated very much, that has a few of the older books and some news, called brianwalsby.net. And, so I would check out any of those three things. I'm no stranger to the internet, for better or for worse. It's a necessary evil, so I'll be lurking about.
Well, fair enough. Brian, thanks again. I will see you on tour with the Melvins. I'm looking forward to that, and always a pleasure.
Well, thanks for this quick interview. I'm interested. I don't know what you're doing, but I like the brisk 5-minute interview. I think that's a good selling point, you know, for people. Everyone's in a hurry. People got things to do, you know, so
cool. Well, I'll send it to you when it's live, Brian. Thanks again, and we'll do a longer interview sometime in the fall. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, John.
And that was Brian Walsby. We're going to try Eric from Philomoka again, and if he doesn't answer, we'll try Miguel from Teenage Bottle Rocket. So, yeah, Brian Walsby, perhaps the world's nicest artist.
Brian has a super gnarly parody of like a Bill Sienkiewicz New Mutants cover but it's drawn to be propaganda. It's super fun, super neat. You should go like dig through his Instagram account. There's all sorts of stuff like that. There's like a Ramones, as the X-Men on the cover of like X-Men number one, but instead of, you know, Iceman throwing snowballs at Magneto, they're throwing it at Johnny Rotten. There's all kinds of just gnarly, cool stuff like that.
Yeah, plus he's like a super nice guy.
An automatic voice
okay.
message.
Okay, looks like no error.
Oh no. Every time John gets screws up a call, he vanishes.
Here we go, I'm back. We're doing okay.
Oh no, there's his face again.
We're doing okay time-wise, so we're just going to move on down to Miguel Chen of Teenage Bottle Rocket, and well, looks like Eric's not around, so let's give Miguel a call and we'll see if he answers. So let's see here. I'm calling right now. Could you guys still hear me?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Unfortunately, we could see you for a little while. It was very
disturbing. Yeah, I can see the top of your head, John. You're very animated. typical Paisan, man. Hands always moving.
That's true.
Knocking shit over.
Of course, all the listeners know Teenage Bottle Rocket, perhaps one of the five most popular punk bands at Punk News, I'd say. Maybe five or ten most popular.
Yeah, probably top ten.
So, we're giving Miguel a call right now. I think he was, like, moving to Canada or something, or someone moving from Canada.
Colorado or something. Or Texas, maybe?
Yeah, something. He's moving somewhere.
He's from Wyoming originally, right? Or he lived in Wyoming.
Oh, Miguel, are you there?
Hi, you've reached Miguel. Leave a message and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Are we leaving a message or did John vanish again?
No, I vanished again.
There he is.
I'm back.
There's John.
So
I read his yoga book. I thought it was pretty decent, but it didn't give me a full sense of inner peace.
We got 2 minutes to kill. Maybe we'll try Miguel again later on. Maybe not. And we got Danbert coming up at 10:40. And I think we're doing all right. I mean, you know, we were doing A+ until we had a couple no answers. But listen, I guess the point of it is the chaos, boys. Does everyone find the chaos as amusing as I do? That's the question.
It hasn't really been that much chaos, though. I don't know if there's been enough chaos for it to be amusing.
You feel as though I overstate the chaos aspect of
it. Well, no, I just think it's gone so damn smooth.
I think the briskness of this is fun. I like that we try to banter between the calls and then all of a sudden someone picks up. And that's good. That keeps it moving.
Well, John is just such a machine that we don't even have time to stick. You know, I hate to interrupt. You know, I hate to stick a word in edgewise.
We got Danbert coming up. So if you guys want to interject, feel free. I do like how like someone's like in the middle of a profound point. They're like, and that's when I realized that, you know, I really hated my father. And then we're like, gotta go. It's 5 minutes. You know?
No exceptions.
Yeah, so
we should have done this with some sort of buzzer. That would have really
We should have. That would have been hilarious.
All right, next time we do this, buzzer. That's what we need to do.
All right. Well, I guess no sense in screwing around. Let's give Danbert Nobicon of Chumbawamba a phone call. I know he's anxious because he just sent me a message, so we'll say hello to Danbert. And if you don't know, Chumbawamba is an incredibly seminal and important punk band. They started in 81. They released their first release on Crass's Bullshit Detector. And they put out some independent releases through Spiderleg and the Flux Pink Indians label, One Indian, Little Indian. Then they became, of course, a major label band. They put out Tub Thumper. And then after that, they kind of became – Danbert, you are on Punk News Podcast number 450. Danbert, thank you for being on, and thank you for being our featured guest of the evening.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Danbert, you know, it's good to talk to you again. I just saw you about 4 weeks ago or so. And so, Danbert, here's the question. And at the show, it was Danbert, SZA, Crack, Crazy in the Brains, Kierwood, Kramer, and Roadkiller. At the show, the Philly punk, they loved you. I mean, Danbert, I really think, like I'm going to be honest, I'm not a huge acoustic guy. But when you and Kira were up there, just you and Kira doing songs, I was moved and touched. And I think everybody there realized what you two were doing was kind of a special thing and a beautiful thing to hear and see.
You know, we were on tour for like 10 dates, and that was a really special show. I don't think I've, you know, I've just started playing again more and with Kira. And, you know, I have twins who are now in college, so I have a bit more time to get out and about. But I haven't played a show like that for a long time where, you know, it was a whole bill of of punk rock, and people came out, and you know, it was there was a real feeling about it. So thanks for putting that on, John.
My pleasure. And here's the question, Dameron, and I'm going to put you in an unusual situation, but I have to do it. Is you were in okay. Chimp Eats Banana, cool band. You were, you know, one of the founding members of Chumbawamba, one of the greatest bands of all time. You were on the early Bullshit Detector release. You guys put out a ton of interesting records. You guys merged punk with dance music when no one else was doing it, maybe one of the first bands or the first band to do it. And now you're kind of doing your own thing, which kind of harkens back to your earliest work and also has some unique things about it. Danbert, do you get your due? That's the question.
Say again. What's the question?
Like, do you get your due? I feel as though people appreciate you, but I kind of think you should be hallowed, you know, up there with, you know, the bands that you see in documentaries. You know, let's talk about the history of punk rock. Do you feel as though you get your due? Yeah. And do you care about that? That's another question.
It's funny. I don't know if I'm getting me due at the moment because I'm not very good at you know, kind of marketing what I'm doing now. So I don't think I'm getting me due for what I'm doing now. And I feel it's some of the most creative and interesting stuff I've done, and especially the times we're living in. I think Chumbawamba got the due, you know. I was in Chumbawamba for 22 years, and we made like 11 studio albums. And of course, people remember that big song. But you know, there's a knowledge about Chumbawamba. You know, people remember, especially people who came to shows. I think that's kind of the one of the crucial thing. You know, I mean, before the big song and. If people saw the live show, because we were very theatrical, and it was, like you said, we incorporated more pop music in the punk kind of thing. And that was a whole different thing we were trying to do, you know, for years, really.
Danbert, you know, you are a punk icon, but here's the question for you. Punk, the concept of punk, is that something you even think about? Or I talked to Captain Sensible, and he said, and to me, Captain Sensible is ultra punk. And he says, I don't even really think about it. You know, I just do what I do. So do you think about the concept of punk, or do you just do what you do?
I really do, actually. Yes, I do. I do, because basically it changed my life. You know, as, you know, age 16, 17, I grew up in England in the era of, we call it prog rock or pomp rock, you know, Genesis and Yes and bands like that. And I genuinely believed as a teenager, because nobody told me any different, that you had to be like a musical genius to even play a guitar. So when punk rock came along and it's like, oh yeah, you just got to learn three chords and write some words in like 20 minutes and you can play a song, it totally blew my mind. And when, you know, Chimpy's Banana was kind of like a high school, at the end of high school band, and it lasted for 18 months. But playing in front of people, because I was so shy as a teenager, it just gave me a relief, you know, a way of expressing myself. And I think importantly, because I had, you know, a handful of friends who were in that band around me, it had such a huge impact on me. And it's funny, you know, I have twins, and my son in high school kind of struggled, and I just felt, oh God, I was so lucky that I had friends who were into the same things, you know. So I do think about it, and I teach theatre part-time in high school now, and I think about, you know, and I can see it with certain students, not the ones who are good at it or who were kind of almost born to do it, but the ones who kind of, they're really tentative and they come into it, but you can see that performance, it brings something out of them which is kind of locked away in there, and that's what happened to me. And like I say, it changed my life, and I've been involved in music or performance or theatre all my adult life, and I'll do it till I can't stand up anymore.
You mentioned that you were shy as a teenager, which really surprised me, because if you listen to, you know, Chumbawamba, if you see you on stage now, there's no hint of shyness whatsoever. Are you still shy, do you think? Or you've, like, I guess, grown through that or have evolved beyond that or something like that?
I think I've grown through and evolved. I am, some, you know, in a social situation, you know, where it's like, I don't know, a party, or I'm a little bit shy in that thing. But, you know, on stage, I'm not shy. As a person, I'm a little bit shy still. But I have grown out of it as well, which is a good thing.
You've got a couple of new records out, or new Wish records. There's a Dan Burt doing Star Wind of Darwin stuff, which has been out about a year and a half. And then you just, mm-hmm. I guess rejiggered or reworked an album as Woe Be Gone Er, which is you, Miranda Ziegler, and is Kira on that album as well, or she's not on? I think she's on that album, right?
She just did some little voiceovers. So that was right at the time I was doing that. Right at the time me and Kira started working together. So we have a plan. I've actually booked some studio time. I probably mentioned this when we were in Philadelphia. We're trying to do an album to come out early next year and tour it. And it's kind of all the stuff that has been coming out of me since, you know, Trump got elected. So it's very political, but it's, so I'm trying to make it theatrical as well. So it's kind of half songs and half theater. That's the idea. You know, and I have a lot of these parts kind of floating around in my brain, and some of them I've worked on, and some of the, I have most of the songs for it, but the theatre stuff, I'm just starting work at the end, because now it's summer and I'm not in school. I've got a bit more time. So, yeah, that's the plan.
Well, actually, you know, you mentioned Trump. The last album, the Axis album, had a very heavy ecological theme to it, and it dealt with ecology and science. Dan, are you feeling optimistic these days or pessimistic? How are you feeling about the next upcoming, say, 18 months?
I'm a little bit of both. I have different days. I think there is real optimism because there are people all over. Maybe I mentioned this as well. You know, Extinction Rebellion in England did like 10 days of direct action, and they haven't had anything like that in England since the early 60s, when there was a civil disobedience movement against nuclear weapons. And it's their thing is right. We're in an emergency. It's happening now. It's happening all over the world. And the media in particular are basically not doing the job. They're ignoring what's going on. And if we can keep that in the public eye, get it in the public eye, keep it there, then I'm hopeful. Whether whoever gets elected, if it's Trump again or Joe Biden, I think we're in a mess, but I think it will cause a lot more people to want to rebel. If we can get somebody progressive, I don't know, like Bernie Sanders, who actually is, you know, trying to make real change and rein in, you know, big fossil fuel, then maybe that's a good way to go. But yeah, it is a really intense time, and I do have hope, because there are so many people, especially young people, who realize what's going on. You know, the mainstream media can't cover it up because it's happening. You know, like where I live, we're in fire season now, and it's been calm at the moment, but any day, you know, it's getting drier. You know, we get a thunderstorm coming through, there'll be fires. And the last 5 years have been pretty intense in that way in the summers. So people are waking up to the fact, you know, and they could deny it and pretend it's not happening and just talk about, you know, the Kardashians or whatever. But sooner or later, enough people are going to wake up to the fact that our very life support system is under attack, is crumbling, is threatened, and we have to change course. So I think that will happen anyway, whatever we do, but I hope we can do it in a way which, you know, gives justice to the 99%.
Actually, Dan, you mentioned just a couple of last questions for you. You mentioned something very interesting. You mentioned the Kardashians. Throughout your career, you've directly named, I guess, what we call celebrities or people in the forefront of the news, and have done nasty things to them. Cliff Richard, you know, back in the day, currently Rex Tillerson. You've dumped water on the Deputy Prime Minister of England. You know, you have not been afraid to take direct – well, you have not been afraid to directly name, I guess, celebrities and kind of dissect them. Ian MacKay of Fugazi has a statement. He says, I wouldn't throw rocks at someone, so I wouldn't do that with words either. But I believe, and I actually agree with your position, in that with these mega celebrities, when they're doing something bad, it's okay to mock them for it. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. And like in Chumwa, we always try to use humor. I think that's really, really important, because, the shit is hitting the fan, but we need, we need some play in our lives to regenerate the batteries to keep our spirits up, whether it's song or dance or whatever it is, art. The time is long past where we can just pretend that, oh yeah, they're film stars or whatever, music millionaires, they're okay because they're kind of, but they take all the attention away. And I'm not saying it's their fault, it's the way the media is deliberately structured to distract us from what is actually going on, whether it's environmental or the next war or whatever it is. And I just think, as someone in the public eye, you have to have a little bit of social responsibility.
Danbert, well put. Last question. What do you hope people take from your music or your art?
Well, it's just that, it's that I was inspired and punk rock changed my life. And, maybe it kind of tapped into what was already there. My parents are like working class and kind of progressive in a way. I just hope that, if I can inspire somebody to think, oh, yeah, I'm not alone in this. There's people like me. There's people who are questioning everything that's going on, because it's obvious that something is going badly wrong, whether it's because you can't afford to pay your rent because rent are way in excess of minimum wage, or whether it's the environment is crumbling. If I can inspire anyone in any way and be part, and that's why that's why I call the sort of umbrella name for the musicians I work with, the Axis of Dissent, because I think there's people all over the world who are feeling, we have to change or we're totally screwed. And it's that, it's a real grassroots kind of thing. But, if we can break through, I was in Chumwa when we were in the mainstream for that, 15 seconds or whatever, but you don't play by the rules, and you're like, okay, well, we're not going to ask you back on Letterman, or we're not going to ask you back on whatever it is. And it's very hard to break through that. But the fact that there are undercurrents and people doing punk rock or whatever it is, or art or film, guerrilla film, then that is why we need that. So I'm just happy that I'm part of that, and that maybe I'll inspire other people to be part of it and be proud of that. And when it comes to it, we'll take whatever action we need to take.
Well, Danbert, well put, definitely well put. Danbert's set was one of the coolest sets I've ever seen with him and Kira. You can check Danbert at danbertnobicon-axis.bandcamp.com. Danbert, thanks again. We'll do a longer interview in the fall sometime, maybe a profile. But as always, a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks, John. And yeah, we hope to come back to the East Coast next year with the record. So.
Fantastic.
Cool.
All right, Danbert, talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Thanks, John. Bye.
And that was the legendary Danbert Nobacon of – I'm never sure it's No Bacon or Nobacon of Chumbawamba, but either way, he is the man, let me tell you. All right, guys, we're running it down. Do you think we should call Adam Davis? Should we try Miguel Chen? Should we try Eric from Villamoca? What do you guys want to do?
You're in charge of the ship here. We're just passengers. So
let's try Eric one more time. Then we'll try Miguel, and then we'll try Adam, and then we'll call it a night. I can't believe it's already been an hour and a half. It feels like it's been about 25 minutes. Maybe it seems longer for you on your guys end. I'm not sure. So we're trying.
I may or may not have dozed off for a second there.
So this is Eric of Villamoca, where we threw Summer Soiree 1. He's going to host Summer Soiree 3. and we'll see if he answers. And if not, we'll try Miguel.
Call has been forwarded to an automatic voice right. message. So listen.
Oh, no. John's gone again.
I'm back. So let's try let's try Miguel. And then hello, Thomas. We'll try Miguel, and then if he answers, he does, and if he doesn't, that's cool too. And that's how we roll, baby. But I'll tell you, boys, we're getting a lot of like really amazing pearls of wisdom between Lauren and Danberg and the Drugettes about being yourself. We're gonna honestly, I don't know if I would be interviewed. I don't know if I could be as deep and as succinct as some of these artists are being.
That's why nobody wants to interview you, John.
That is true. That is true. So we're calling Miguel right now. Teenage Bottle Rocket, I think they just had an album out not too long ago, correct?
This year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then let's see. Tom, you're a big fan, right?
You know, I don't have the new album, but I am, yes. The new album is called Get Rad. It came out this year. I don't have it yet.
Let's see. Miguel, are you?
Miguel. Leave a message, and I'll get back to you.
All right. So.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording.
All right. No Miguel. So we got one call left. We're going to call Adam Davis of Gnar Boots and his new band, Omnigon. And then we'll wrap this bad boy on up. All right. Let's give him a call. What if Adam doesn't answer? So like the end of our podcast is like three no answers.
After all the like success early on.
Yeah. Adam right now.
I mean, failing out at the end would really be an appropriate thing for us to do.
All right, so we're calling. Of course, this is Adam Davis. He was in Linkay 80. He was in Gnar Boots, one of the freakiest and coolest bands I've ever seen. And now he's got a new project called Omnigon, which I think is an homage back to his ska and ska punk recordings from the 90s. I think that's what it is, and we'll talk to him about it. But interesting thing about Adam is even though he's kind of a ska punker, has a ska punk background, he's actually a relatively dark guy emotionally, if you will. So we'll see if he answers. And I think he's not going to answer. Yep, Adam, are you there?
You got my voicemail. Leave a message.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. Unreliable punk rockers.
Adam, this is John Gentile, and you're live on Punk News Podcast 450, and you didn't answer. So I think we'll just do the interview anyways right now, even though he's not going to answer. So, Adam, why did you choose to do Omnigon? No answer. Adam, what's happened with Gnar Boots? No answer. There you have it, people, gentlemen, Adam Davis of Gnar Boots. And so there, I feel as though maybe we jinxed ourselves. At the very end, but listen, we ended with Danbert No Bacon. Lots of ways, worse ways to end than without than having Danbert, because Danbert is the man. He's the legend. All the kids need to check him out.
I guess, but I really wanted to ask someone several Danzig questions, and nobody was available.
Well, we always have each other. You could just ask John Danzig.
Well, today is the 29th anniversary of Lucifuge, Danzig's second and finest album. What's your favorite cut from that album, Adam?
I know nothing about Lucifuge. Are you making that up?
It Tired of Being Alive or Long Way Back from Hell?
Under Her Black Wings, Adam. You have to agree with me.
Devil's Under Her Black Wings. Oh, those are also good.
I actually had to look that up and make sure that Lucifuge wasn't just a parody name that you came up with, because that sounds like that would be a Danzig record.
Also, Adam, do you think that Danzig really thought his horror movie that he just made was going to be funny, or is this revisionist history because people are laughing at it?
No, he did not think it was going to be. I mean, I don't even know if he's admitted now that it's funny. Like, I think he's mad that people think it's funny. And I actually, Tom, I was thinking about this. Like, in a way, I feel bad for Danzig, because no matter what, Danzig is true of heart in that he does something because he thinks it's cool to do. Like, he's never really done anything to sell records, you know, or to say. I mean, some people argue Danzig 5, but I think he genuinely likes that kind of stuff. But like,
you know, but
what I'm saying is, like, he made this movie because he wanted to make this movie. Like, no one said, Danzig, you're going
to
make a ton of money.
It takes a certain amount of hubris to say you'd be a musician and be an excellent musician, a visionary musician, and just be able to assume that you'd be able to do the same directing movies.
Well, that's a part of it. I honestly, I wish the movie was – I haven't seen it yet. Maybe it is really good. but I the reviews are not.
I would say your hopes are not high at this point, are they?
Yeah, yeah. But see, I do wish that he had relied on other people's expertise to help him achieve his vision. And I guess, you know, like
when he surrounds himself probably with people who. I don't know, but I suspect he surrounds himself with people who tell him how great he is.
Look at that. When he did the Misfits and Samhain, he had no advisors, and he made arguably the greatest music of all time, you know?
But he wasn't alone in the Samhain was his project, but the Misfits were a little more collaborative.
Yeah, well, you think Jerry Only did a lot in the Misfits? I mean,
yes.
This is how we're ending 450? Is you two gibbering about Danzig?
Just three young boobas from New Jersey, dude. Figured it out.
We'll talk about the Misfits next week. Adam White, we're at 450. We're wrapping it up. It was a relatively successful episode. What does it mean to you that we've done 450 episodes, 9 years of the Punk News podcast, and we're still going strong while other publications that have trashed us in the past are fading away?
I was just thinking, like how could I have bettered my life by taking this hour a week and doing something better for 9 years? Like what if every podcast episode
you could have built one of those ships in the bottle?
No, fuck it. Like, what if I went to the gym every episode that we would have recorded? I went to the gym. I could be,
you look like a young Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I could be huge. Oh, what am I doing to myself?
But look, I mean, Adam, you're taking a very pessimistic point of view. Like, let's say you were, you could have learned accounting, you know what I mean? And at the end of your life, wow, you did more accounting. But now at the end of your life, you've been actively involved in the arts for over 9 years and have had somewhat of a ripple effect on other people that are fan of arts. And
we don't read all the emails, Adam, but what about all those emails from young people who say, the Punk News podcast saved my life?
True.
When I was at my lowest and didn't want to go on, Adam White's voice reached out for me.
Are people said, but what about all the letters that are like, hey, Adam, don't you wish you had abs? You could have, but you recorded this podcast.
like you say, letters that said, Adam, you need to retire. It's time. You're done. Be done. Yeah. An hour a week in the gym is not going to do that.
No, I guess not.
That's true. I mean, honestly, if you want Doyle-style abs, you literally have to work out 6 hours a day.
No, I'm not talking about fucking Danzig anymore. All right. We're out. We're gone. Goodbye. Podcast canceled.
Punk News Podcast.
Never heard enough hours a day to talk about Danzig.
This is Absolute Punk News Podcast 450. 450 more coming at you over the next 9 years. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. And we have to thank the listeners. Thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate that you listen. John, I know I do. I know we talk trash on a lot of people, but we do love that you are listeners. And thank you for sticking with us over the past 9 years and beyond.
I just have one final parting thought, John.
Cut, Tom.
Whoa, under her black wing.